Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about books. And boy, have you come to the right place if you like to read. If you don't like to read, stick around anyway. The conversation is going to be terrific. My guests for this program are Michelle Herman, who is director of the Creative Writing Program at The Ohio State University. Her new novel is called Devotion. Lee Martin is on the faculty of The Ohio State University, and his new novel is called Late One Night, which is a page-turner, let me tell you. And Cassie Rose, the adult of the conversation, the book critic for WOSU. Her blog is called thelongestchapter.com. It is essential for anyone who loves to read. So without further ado, welcome everybody. Thank you for being here. Michelle Herman, Devotion, wonderful, slightly ambiguous title. Discuss.
The title, the ambiguity, the book itself. I like one-word titles very much.
I noticed that, yes.
I like noun one-word titles especially. So Devotion is about a girl in the 60s in Brooklyn from a very strict family who has an affair with her 69-year-old voice teacher while she's still in high school. He is formerly a famous Hungarian tenor. I mean, he's still Hungarian. He was a famous tenor in Hungary during the war. And she falls madly in love with him. She gets pregnant, and the two of them escape under cover of night and run away to Omaha, Nebraska.
They escape from her family, from her strict family?
Yes. Right. She tells her parents the news, and then and this all happens at the very beginning of the book. The book really opens on the day they get married, when she's 18 in Omaha, and they have settled there. And you kind of go through her life with her until the time of her husband's death.
That probably would not be an easy, smooth life. There'll probably be bumps and interesting episodes along the way. Tell me what it is to be sitting and doing your own work and writing your own books. I believe you have 7 books in print. There was a volume of essays last year. You've got several novels. One was called Dog. You've written about your experience with motherhood. So you're trying to do your own work, and you are running a creative writing program, what has become one of the most important in the country. How does one balance that?
Well, it's like balancing motherhood and doing any kind of work. You know, you can't always do all of it well. So some days you're a brilliant teacher and you're failing as a writer and as an administrator. And some days you're doing a great job as an administrator and failing your students in your writing. And other days you're just a writer. In the end, it's kind of like a healthy diet. You hope it balances out if you have fruit one day and protein the next day. I like to think that actually the experience of raising my daughter helped me figure out how to balance all of that, because I think I don't do too terrible a job at any of it. That said, I'm very excited about the fact that I'm about to step down as director, at least for a while, yes, as of September or August, when the new semester begins, and I am actually going on sabbatical for the first time in 20 years.
And can you tell us what you have intention for the sabbatical? What your ideas are? A new book?
I have a very no R&R. I don't believe in R&R. You know, occasional hour. But yes, I have a new novel that I have a very, very large, unwieldy, overblown draft of that today, after I leave you, I am about to start the second draft of.
Is your trajectory the same from the time you sit down and begin work to the time you end, in terms of how long it takes, in terms of the demands made on you, the effort it takes, et cetera? Is it writing, or does it vary with what you're writing about or what the piece means to you in its inception?
It's a really good question. In general, there are two factors. One is whether I'm writing nonfiction or fiction. The nonfiction comes very quickly to me. Other writers find exactly the opposite to be true, but my personal narrative nonfiction, I write from start to finish very fast. The fiction is always kind of slow, but honestly, the trajectory depends much more on what else I'm doing in my life than it depends on the material itself. This new novel is one I started 9 years ago. Now, it's true the draft is about 700 pages, in the course of writing that book, not only have I been directing the creative writing program and teaching, sending my daughter off to college, I also wrote several nonfiction books and a children's book because those are my breaks from working on the fiction, which is difficult for me. It comes very slowly.
Now, Lee Martin, your new book is called Late One Night. It is a very gritty read to me, and it is a page-turner. I quite seriously couldn't put it down. You catch the voice, the small-town voice, very, very directly. That I understand is partly your background, but I'm sure a great deal of it is skill. What, in terms of storytelling, is important to you? What do we need to know, or what can be held back as we begin one of your books?
The thing that's really important to me is capturing the voice of a community and the voice of the individual characters within the community. I want my books to be entertaining in the sense of having readers want to know what's going to happen next. But more than that, I want the stories that I'm telling to reveal something about what it is to live inside these people's skins, people who ordinarily live in rural areas or small towns.
Late One Night opens with a devastating fire, and the novel goes on to, it's almost a whodunit, but it's more than that, because the characters, several different characters, become very much alive. There's a woman who is unable to have children, who is put in the care of several children. There are the adults in the community who are shocked by what has happened. There is a mentally challenged young man, and they all kind of mesh very well together. I kind of envisioned you almost working with flowcharts as you were writing.
Well, I don't work with flowcharts. I make myself curious.
And how do you do that?
Well, I start with a situation, the trailer fire in Late One Night, and then I start to play the what-if game. I ask myself what would happen if the fire happened at a time that the husband was living outside the home. What would happen if the fire turned out to be the result of arson? And what would happen if the people in the small town started gossiping to the point that the husband became suspect? And so in that way, I'm making myself curious, wondering what if, what would happen. And then I write a little every day trying to satisfy that curiosity while not being able to satisfy it fully, which keeps me writing until finally I've got everything on the page.
Do you change your mind as you're writing?
Sure, all the time. Yeah. Absolutely. And then some people change my mind for me when I'm writing.
Well, I wouldn't have been one of them. Cassie Rose, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
What's on the longest chapter, your blog? What are we talking about on your blog lately?
I recently posted a letter for the woman in the back row. That's what it's called, because I had a speaking engagement about 2 weeks ago, and the woman in the back row asked me to recommend a good book for her. And I went down the path of saying that always silences me. And yet I expect myself to be able to just roll out answers right away. But the challenge is I don't know this person. So the blog post is about how when we used to have independent bookstores, the bookseller was not only a curator of books, but got to know you personally, got to know your tastes and what you liked in books, and knew nuances and could hear nuances, which we don't get on Barnes & Noble and Amazon with the automatic matches. So the blog post is answering this woman with a better answer than I gave her at the event, because I couldn't think quickly enough. So I gave 3 book reviews, and I don't even know if she follows the blog, but that was it. So, and she wanted something like Anthony Doerr's All the Light We Cannot See. And when someone also puts that out there on the table, it's like, how do I do that? So I gave her 3 books that have to do with World War II, and that's on the blog.
And if you want to know what they are, you have to go to thelongestchapter.com.
You want me to tell you?
We're not going to give that away here. We're not going to give that away here. Michelle Herman, you once told me that you insisted that your writing students read all the time.
Yeah.
What kind of things do you read?
Well, I read
not that you're a writing student. I'm just saying.
No. I read a lot of different kinds of things. And, you know, as I say, I'm getting ready for a sabbatical. So I have got piled on every surface in my house all the books I've been wanting to read, including the damn Hamilton biography.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the show?
Can
you
get tickets? I'm going to see it at the end of June.
Wow. All right.
But I'm in the middle of reading that and the Van Gogh biography that came out a few years ago that has been sitting and waiting for me to have time for it. I'm also, lately, I have been really especially interested, this will not come as a surprise to you, in writing about motherhood and in particular—
She's grown up already. She's in college with the motherhood.
I'm not reading nonfiction.
You have grandchildren. We're going to be hearing—
Stop. Stop. She's not even 23 yet. In ideas about how women navigate motherhood and ideas about children and babies. And to that end, I have to tell you that I just finished reading the best book I've read in forever. It's a tiny little brand new book called Little Labors by Rivka Galchen that I want to recommend not only to everyone who's interested in babies, but anyone who loves a beautiful sentence. And it's a tiny, beautiful little book you can put in your purse. They're very, very short essays about kind of meditations on babiness. And it was so inspiring. It got me in the middle of everything else, in Mittendrinnen, as I say, to start a new short story, which I have meant to write for probably 25 years from the point of view of a baby. If anyone's going to do it, it's going to be me. Also, Rachel Cusk, who's a wonderful British novelist and memoirist, really interesting, prickly, difficult sort of writer. The books aren't difficult, but the persona is. And I have loved Outline and the Bradshaw Variations. And then the book about the end of her marriage, Aftermath, is a very bracing read. The fantastic book about early motherhood called A Life's Work. Those are my current things that I'm thinking
about.
But
the baby book, tell me the title again.
Little Labors
by
Rivka Galchen. It was just published, I think, 3 days ago.
Okay, that's the perfect, maybe even for Father's Day. What do you know? Who knows? Come
Actually,
on.
I think
sure.
It would be brilliant
yes.
to give it to a new father.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Write that down, everybody. Cassie Rose, before we go to break, I want to get your first recommendation.
I'm going to give the potato chip bag that I
mentioned
earlier.
Yes, yes.
it's because, you know, with the summertime is that you want thrillers, you want the fast reads. This is called The Defense by Steve Kavanaugh. It just came out this month. It is about a con artist, former lawyer, who is now called back to being a lawyer because the Russian mob has wired him with a bomb and told him he has 48 hours to get their boss off a murder charge. It is completely implausible, but you don't care. It is so good. At the end of every chapter, you think there's no way he's going to get out of it. He gets out of it. It is.
Don't give it away.
I won't. It is a terrific book.
So we're all for bags of potato chips. It's called The Defense
by Steve Kavanaugh.
Steve Kavanaugh. Okay, everybody. Hold that thought. We're going to go to our first break. We are back in 45 seconds. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. Books don't go away. We are back with All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. My guests are Lee Martin, who is the professor of English at The Ohio State University and a Pulitzer Prize finalist. His new novel is called Late One Night. Michelle Herman is the director of the Creative Writing Department at The Ohio State University on the English faculty, and her new novel is called Devotion. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and she doesn't have to write novels because she's so good at talking about them. And I'm Christopher Purdy, and I can't do anything except yak. So here we are. Lee Martin, I wanted to go back to you. We were talking a bit off mic, and the two of you writers were saying that when you are working on something, you tend not to read anything that might be in a similar genre. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, I write both fiction and nonfiction, as Michelle does too. And for me, it's a matter of not wanting a similar voice in my head when I'm working on a particular piece. Let's say I'm working on a piece of nonfiction. I'm usually not going to read nonfiction while I'm working on that. I like to read poetry while I'm working on any kind of form because the music of the language, kind of jumpstarts me. When I'm working on my own novels, for example, I tend to stay away from other writers who are working in similar veins as I am.
I have never been to some of the communities you write about in your novels. I don't really know anything about them at all, but I feel like I've lived there, having read a couple of your books now. You have an incredibly authentic voice and certainly an ear for dialogue and situations. I don't know if that's something that because you're semi-autobiographical in your fiction or if it's skill or whatever, but where did your ear come from?
I think it came from the fact that I sat on front porches and in kitchens listening to people tell stories when I was growing up. I was the only child of older parents. My mother was 45 when I was born, and so anytime we went to visit anyone, there were no kids around, so I sat with the adults and I listened to people tell stories. And that part of Southern Illinois where I come from, stories are sort of currency there. You tell a good story, you have some cachet in the community. And I think I picked up my ear for dialogue and for narrative from listening to those oral storytellers.
So are you ever informed in terms of the development of your ear as well as by things you have read in the past?
Well, I can remember when I first started writing, I was like a lot of young writers. I didn't trust my material and I didn't trust the world that I came from. I thought that nobody would be interested in these stories from small towns and farming communities. And then I read Richard Ford's collection of short stories, Rock Springs. And even though Ford was writing about the American West, there was something in the voice of those stories that sort of gave me permission to write about my own working class people from Southern Illinois. And that was a huge influence on me. And it was from that point forward that I really started writing from the world I knew best, which we always tell our students to do, to, you know, trust your world, trust your material.
One thing that I noticed in reading your novels is there's always a sense of an impending something. And it's not always, I mean, it's a tragedy or some kind of violence, without necessarily being bloodshed, but that's one of the things that kept me turning the pages. So, again, if you want to read page turners, I recommend the novels of Lee Martin. The latest one is called Late One Night, and Lee Martin is here. What are you reading now?
I'm reading a lot of the old classics this summer, rereading most of them, Sound and the Fury, Wuthering Heights. I'm reading The Color Purple right now. I'm getting ready to teach a forms of narrative seminar in the fall, so I'm reading things that I might consider for that. I'm reading memoirs. There's a little book that people may not know. It came out some years ago called The Sparkling-Eyed Boy by Amy Benson. It's a memoir that doesn't take a traditional narrative approach. And then the contemporary novel that I read most recently that I really, really loved was the new Elizabeth Strout book, My Name is Lucy Barton.
I like that too. Yeah, terrific. How about you, Michelle Herman? What are you reading? What else is on your bookside table? You said you had a volcano in your living room of books.
Yeah, I also have it's interesting. When I go back to the classics, I go back to the Russians. So I actually, in my stack, I never did read the new translations of Anna Karenina and War and Peace while I've been teaching and administrating. There was no time, so I'm ready to reread those books now in what I understand are much better translations. I also have piles of new novels and collections of short stories that I've been amassing. I can't even tell you their names. I mean, anyone who's published a book in the last year,
it comes to that, your living room.
Yeah, I mean, they're waiting for me to read. I've also been rereading Mary McCarthy. That's what I was doing yesterday. As I said moments ago, my daughter's about to turn 23. I can trust that she's not listening in New York City.
We're streamed.
I know, but I doubt very much that she's listening. Grace, if you're listening, close your ears now because I'm going to talk about your birthday presents.
Oh.
And I've been amassing books to send her, along with other finery. And I thought it would be fun, since she is in her early 20s, living in New York, starting out as a working artist there, to send her some of the classics of young women making their way.
Sex of the Single Girl? No.
Not Sex and the Single Girl, but Dates Fear of Flying.
Yeah, really?
I bought her a copy of
Fear of
Flying.
You're sending your daughter's, wow, times have changed.
Seminal book, right? And Mary McCarthy's the company she keeps. And so I'm rereading these books before I put them in the box to send
her. I'll bet you are.
Well, I feel like, you know, there is a kind of literature of being in your 20s and single.
Do they have to be in New York City?
They don't have to be. If you have some good ideas, I'm happy to hear them.
Well, what about Memoirs of an Ex-Prom Queen?
Oh, I loved that book when I was young. Thank you.
Talk amongst yourselves out there. We're talking about Memoirs of an Ex-Prom Queen.
Oh, that was a good
book.
Because
she's Cleveland and then she has New York.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea. I'm going to put it on the list.
Mm. While we discuss the ZF here on All Sides Weekend Books, Cassie Rose, Rescue Me, give me another book to talk about.
I will give you The Summer That Melted Everything. It's coming out in July. It is by Tiffany McDaniel. It's her debut novel. It takes place in small town Ohio. And I don't know if it's you would pronounce it Breathed or Breathed, Ohio. Do you happen to know?
No.
Anyway, the concept of it is the small town. It's a scorchingly hot summer. And there is a young boy that comes to town and the son of the prosecutor befriends him. And this 13-year-old little boy says he's the devil. And this small town gets really upset over all this. Now, I haven't read the book. This is the book I'm going to read this weekend. But it's gotten a lot of pre-publication buzz. I think that it's going to be a really good novel.
Who is Tiffany McDaniel? Do you know the writer? You said first-time novelist.
Yes, and it's sort of interesting. People ask me, how do I choose books? And sometimes
they
choose me.
You?
How
did
this? She got a hold of my private email. And she got a hold of my private email because she knows a professor at Capital University who gave her my private email. And I got it. And my first reaction, and I have had so many authors come toward me and their stories I could tell, but I froze. I thought, I just don't know if I can say yes or not. I can't commit to it. And she wrote me again the week later, did you get my email? And I said, I did. And then I told her that, explained to her, fully transparent, that I have been hounded lately on Twitter by authors, and I respect them and what they are doing, what they need to do to get exposure. But I said, I froze me. And basically the underlying was, I will take your book, but you please don't hound me.
Did you hear from publishers or agents as opposed to writers directly? Was that unusual for you? Of course, your private email must
have
been.
That was unusual.
Yeah. And you and Hillary, I mean, that's
good stuff here. Right. So that was unusual. And because I have great respect for this professor, I didn't know what to say. I'm very glad, though, that I said yes, because, again, I think it's a promising book. And I don't know if it would have gotten to me if I hadn't read about it.
Who published it, Cassie? Who's the publisher?
I think it's St. Martin's. So, but that was unusual to get it through the private. And, the hounding part of it just comes, there was, and I won't go into full detail about it, but it was during some research. I always comb every possibility, and I was looking on the web, and I was reading about a book, and I commented on it, saying, boy, that sounds like an interesting book. Didn't cross my radar screen. I get an email that's, would you like to look at the book? I think it's that book, when it turns out, and I stopped a moment and realized it was the person reviewing the book. Mm. Well, it turned out be fine, but he was a very powerful person in Washington, D.C., and not that anyone would know him, but he had an administrative assistant, and I will tell you every week, it was, are you going to review it? I'd say, well, it's on the reading table. Where in the reading table is it? Well, it's in the to-be-read pile. Where in the to-be-read pile is it? It really got to be funny. I said,
Dear
well, it's
Joe,
in the middle.
I hated it. Love Cassie.
Is it gotten to the top yet? And after that, I was like, I give up.
Go away.
So anyway, that's a long way of saying Tiffany McDaniel did find me, and I'm going to be reading her book this weekend. And
I want to know if the boy actually turns out to be the devil.
That's
I have to read the book, too. Yes.
Yeah. But I don't read page-turning type scary books with devils in them.
Well, I'll let you know.
Let me know.
Send me an email
to my private email.
Right.
With that, let me encourage anybody who would like to offer a recommendation or ask a question of our authors and our literary experts to call 614-292-8513 if you'd like to get in the conversation. 614-292-8513 or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Let us know what you're reading. And Brian has been waiting very patiently. If you're still there, hello, Brian.
Oh, good morning.
Go ahead.
I would recommend a nonfiction book by the author of G. Edward Griffin. It's called The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Tell us about it.
Well, it's the subtitle is The Second Look at the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve Bank was created in 1913 on Jekyll Island in Georgia, and it's not federal, no reserve, and it's not a bank. And it's about 600 pages long. It's got large fonts, so it won't hurt your eyes. And it's extremely eye-opening. And you'll see quotes from many different people over the last 100 years about how the world government actually works.
We'll look forward to that. Brian, thank you very much for the call and the recommendation here on All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy, talking today with Michelle Herman, whose new novel is called Devotion, to Lee Martin, whose new novel is Late One Night, and to Cassie Rose, who reviews new novels and old novels and everything else. And if she recommends something, you should read it here on All Sides Weekend. If you'd like to call, 614-292-8513. Also send emails to allsides@wosu.org. Lee Martin, can you talk at all about what your next project is or where you are in the process, or are you just basking in well-deserved success? Or
no, I'm always
working.
I'm always working on something.
You guys, you don't stop, do you? Really?
No. If we stop, we'll never get started again.
Exactly.
I've got a couple of novel manuscripts that I'm revising, and I'm working on a new. I think it's going to be a new memoir, but I'm not positive. I hope I'm going to get a book manuscript out of this. And the only thing I'll say about it is it has a connection to the magazine Highlights for Children.
Really? Which used to be based here.
It still is. Which you may recall from your doctors and dentist offices.
I recall it from second grade, but I'm pretty old.
I mean, had a subscription to it. That's how devoted I was to it.
We never could afford a subscription, so I only got to do it in the doctor's office. And it was always so disappointing when you saw that some other kid had beat you to the hidden pictures already circled everything.
That's why they finally got me a subscription, because I was so devastated when I couldn't do that. Yeah.
Did you tear the pages out when you could find them and take them home?
Oh, never.
Oh, good for you.
That actually reminds me. Here's a book to recommend. A book about books and reading called Ex Libris by Anne Fadiman. Do you know this book, Cassie?
I know of it. I love Anne Fadiman.
It's a fantastic book. And the reason what Lee said in answer to Chris's question made me think about it is because it's a book of full of short essays about books and reading. And one of the essays in it, my favorite, is called Never Do That to a Book. And it describes the difference between carnal and courtly book lovers.
Carnal and courtly book lovers.
And carnal book lovers don't treat books as objects, but destroy them when reading them. And I am among... I'm betting now, I've known Lee for many years, but we've never discussed this. I bet he's a courtly book lover.
Not true.
Do you dog-ear pages?
I do. And I write comments in the margins, and I underline.
Underline, do you highlight? Yeah.
I have.
Yes. Library books? I've done that.
I've never done that.
So you're a carnal book lover,
I'm pretty
too.
Carnal book lover. Yeah. That's the one area in my life.
So I'm the only courtly one here then.
I guess. Oh, yes. You are very courtly.
I am. But you know why? That's because I'm also a book collector.
So I make
sure that it stays in good condition. I will go out and get a reading copy if I want to destroy or...
And that's funny.
The only time
I'm careful with a book is these books I've bought for my daughter now. I'm pre-reading them before, and I'm reading so carefully because I don't want to wreck them. But I will read in the bathtub. I'll read in the ocean. I will read on a lounge chair in the ocean, and my books are all curled.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
So are there certain scenes you're looking for in the books that you're thinking your daughter shouldn't?
No, I am not looking for scenes. I'm trying to make sure the books are good enough books to send her.
I see. Okay.
I don't protect her from anything.
Yes.
But she's a very – she's even more judgmental than I am. And so the book has to be – that Fear of Flying, which I haven't read since it came out, I just want to make sure that – line by line, it's not going to irritate her.
Interesting. Okay.
There's one section I think that might, or I think around page 40, but it's been 40 years since I've read that book. But anyway, I want to talk with Eric in Columbus, who has a question or a comment about the Columbus Library. Greg Dodd, if you're listening, I'm taking this call. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to call in. I'm a very avid reader, and I have actually just discovered the Columbus Library system of being able to get books through OverDrive. And I got to say, I've downloaded the Alexander Hamilton biography by Ron Chernow, and, you know, the variety and the availability of books that's on their system is just incredible. It seems like there's such a plethora of options out there and for people to pick.
Is that an app?
Yeah, so what I had done was I downloaded OverDrive, which I think is an app, and somehow it interacts with the Kindle app on, you know, my tablet and my smartphone. And, you know, there's just so many books you can get from other library systems and even like the State of Ohio Library. It blows my mind how convenient it is to be able to get even like the Alexander Hamilton biography, which is very difficult to get, seems like, with the popularity of the musical, how many copies are just, you know, free for people to get.
Well, that's good to know. Thank you very much. Lee Martin, I was going to ask you a little bit more, because since I'm a technophobe, what exactly this is, how we can all access this.
Oh, well, I'm not the expert on this, but I do know that the Columbus Public Library has e-versions of books.
Sure, yeah.
And this OverDrive, I believe, is an app that allows you to download a book or, you know, for a certain period of time.
Well, let's look for that as well. Are you kindling still, Cassie Rose, or are you reading with books in your hand? Were kindling for a little while, I think, years ago.
Well, when the Kindle came out, I felt like I needed to know it, and so I did buy one, and I was pretty quickly disappointed because the books that I wanted it didn't have on the Kindle, and then I was going to back read a lot of books, and then I pretty quickly got frustrated because I love the book. I love the way it feels, the way it smells, the way all about it, and because it's got character, and I want to hold it and I want to carry it with me, and I also have to be able to page back and forth, especially if I'm reviewing a book. So the Kindle quickly became out of favor for me.
And Michelle Herman can't write love to you on a Kindle, let's face it, what she can do in her book. We have to take a break. We'll be back in 1 minute. Don't go away. All Sides Weekend Book continues shortly. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are back with the final segment of today's edition of All Sides Weekend, talking about books with people who make and discuss books. Lee Martin, professor of English on the faculty at The Ohio State University. His new novel is Late One Night. Michelle Herman is the director of the creative writing program for a bit longer, and then she's taking a sabbatical, which surprises me. Her new novel is called Devotion. It is about, it is a love story of sorts, I think, about a young woman and her much older voice teacher husband. They wind up in Nebraska. Okay. And Cassie Rose is the book critic for WOSU. And as usual, she has recommendations for us. And if you'd like to join in, call 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. Here's a question for you two writers. Lee Martin, who do you want to read your books when they become audiobooks?
I'd prefer to do it myself.
Really?
To tell you the truth.
Have you?
No, I haven't. I've had two books done on audio, and I've had mixed responses to the people who have read them. Some of them I like very much, and some of them I don't.
What didn't you like about it?
Well, when The Bright Forever was on audio, the person who did the voice of Henry Deese, the main character of the book, this is a man who's telling a story that has eaten him up with guilt for 30 years, and the actor who read the role seemed to be very nonchalant about the reading, and it just didn't work for me.
It must have been very difficult to listen to somebody reading your own work.
Yeah, I don't do it. It's like I listen for a little while and then I stop.
One of those classic looking at yourself naked. Never mind. Well,
that's another story.
I can't imagine, Michelle Herman, anybody but you recording your own books. But if somebody were going to do it, like Meryl Streep or who? Or,
I would accept Meryl Streep as a fair substitute. Yeah. I would much prefer to. I mean, I love to read my work out loud. I like to read out loud.
Well, you're a performer.
I am a performer.
You're a singer. Yes. You're a performer. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention your connection with the Harmony Project.
Thank you very much.
And our own David Brown. His work is very much a part of your volume of essays.
Like a Song.
Like a Song, yes, yes. What was it about the Harmony Project that made you want to write about them?
Oh, it's a transformative experience being part of the Harmony Project. And if you are in Columbus and don't know about us, this is a good time for me to put in a plug. Our next concert is on June 8th, Wednesday night. There are a handful of $15 tickets left. The singing experience for those of us who sing in the choir is truly life-altering. There's 230 of us singing harmony, and just the fact, as Christopher, I bet, can attest, to singing harmony with a large group of people is extraordinary. It actually has physical benefits as well as psychological. And I understand that being in the audience of our concerts is an incredible experience. People cry.
It is. I did. We do.
There
yes.
We go.
Yes. Yes. Don't miss the Harmony Project. That was the brainchild of the great David Brown. And basically, recently they had the contest for The Voice.
We did.
And you got a beautiful young woman with a beautiful voice.
All four of the finalists were incredible. And actually, at our concert, the top 25 singers will be joining us for Michael Jackson's Earth Song. And I should mention that the other thing we do in Harmony Project is community service.
That they go hand in hand with membership.
Absolutely.
In the choir. You're out there working in the community. And Kristen wants you to know, Michelle Herman, that your daughter should read The Group by Mary McCarthy, because you were mentioning Mary McCarthy. So I'm sure that's already in her bag, in her package.
Thank you.
Just going off again. That's an interesting question, Lee Martin. What would you send a kid going off to college in a book bag?
Oh, wow. That's quite a question.
Yeah.
The Great Gatsby, To Kill a Mockingbird, The Stories of Anton Chekhov. I don't know. I could go
you
on
can't,
and on.
Yeah. Go ahead. I mean, you can't. The other thing I wanted to add, you mentioned that you were spending the summer reading some of the classics. I'm trying as I get older not to reread. Because, you know, we never know when.
So many books, so little time.
That's right. Yeah. As we round third base here, but I'm deciding to reread a couple of the classics, like The Idiot, because I think that there's so much you don't get the first time, and maybe being now 10 or 15 years older, I might get more, and it might mean more to me. So what's your opinion of rereading, Michelle Herman?
I, too, have been trying to reread less. Of course, when you teach, you end up rereading a lot.
Right.
You don't want to teach a book or a story or an essay unless you've recently reread it. There's a few books I go back to. I go back to Madame Bovary. When I read War and Peace and Anna Karenina this summer, it will be for probably the fourth or fifth time each, but it's been a long time, and as I say, the translation is different. In general, I am not rereading anymore for pleasure. I mean, the piles of books have become overwhelming. And there's so many things I want to be reading. I mean, I'm always reading. I bet this is true of all of us here. Always reading many books at the same time.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, we were talking about the Kindle before. I much prefer to read physical books than to read on the Kindle or on my tablet. But I travel with the Kindle, and the Kindle has been great for that. I travel a lot. And the Hamilton biography I actually bought for the Kindle because it's not a book I wanted to lug around with me, and that has been my go-to book when I'm flying.
Here's a question I'm going to throw out there. What book do you read every year, listeners? Is there one book you read every year or almost every year? 614-292-8513, or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Is there one book that you read every year? I'll go first. Mine is A Confederacy of Dunces. I read John Kennedy O'Toole. I read that every year. I don't care who knows it, obviously. I just told the world. But I mean, I see myself in Ignatius Riley. And if you read the book, you know how ridiculous that is and how wonderful. So do you read a book every year, the same book, regularly, Lee Martin?
I read The Great Gatsby every year.
Do you really? Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Cassie?
Boy, I do not read one book every year. I am just now starting to reread books. And one of the ones I want to reread is Madame Bovary, and I want the Lydia Davis translation.
It's a beautiful try. As soon as that one came out, I reread it. Yeah.
And I'm now going down the path of Catherine Mansfield. I want to reread her short stories.
One of my favorite ever. I'm so happy to have someone recommend her.
Remind us who she was.
Well, Catherine Mansfield was an Australian writer, and I've actually gone down this path where, and Michelle, I'll share this book with you after the show, but it's called My Catherine Mansfield Project, a small book published out of Australia. We don't have it here, but it is about the author grew up in Wellington, New Zealand, so she's and where Catherine Mansfield did. And it's this whole idea of being able to go home. The quote on the imprinted on the front of the book is, "One has left a version of oneself at the place of departure, and it waits for us at the point of return, but she is not me when I get there." And that is very much Catherine Mansfield, and this author, Christy Gunn, was exploring that. So I've read that book, and I now very much want to go back to Catherine Mansfield's short stories as well as her journals and letters.
And, you know, there's not many short stories.
Yes.
You can, it's one her one collected volume of stories. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, that I was going to say there's no book I reread every year, but I have reread Catherine Mansfield's collected stories probably 20 times in my life. They have been hugely influential in the work I do.
She had a short life. That's why her work is
small. She died tragically young.
Well, what is it about her work that's so compelling?
It's the language. It is the way that she can bring forth an image of the place and the moment and the emotional experience
going
on.
Lee Martin does that.
Yes. And again, but it's in its small place. It's capturing the sense of place, which Lee Martin does. Catherine Mansfield does this with her love for Wellington. And she left and she went to live in England and she had that yearning for to go back.
To go home.
It's no different than James Wright had for Martin's Ferry. He left and he never went back to Martin's Ferry, Ohio, but his poetry is filled with that yearning for Martin's Ferry, Ohio.
I'm from Boston. I couldn't afford to go back. There's no, I mean, there's no way I could afford to go back.
It's interesting. The Mansfield, for me, the reason I come back to it over and over again is actually because of the depiction of domestic life and the interior life of her female characters, children, young women, young mothers, women in marriages. I mean, that's my subject matter, love, the experience of love. So while I don't reread a single book every year, the things I do come back to year after year are Catherine Mansfield stories, Chekhov stories.
Right. The lady with the lapdog.
I just last night before bed reread The Darling, which is a great favorite story of mine because I've actually been working on a retelling. Periodically, I will do a contemporary retelling of a Chekhov story. I mean, poetry. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Lee, I read poetry and I will reread Elizabeth Bishop's poems at least once a year.
There is a new book that has come out this week called The Summer Guest, and it's fiction based a little bit on fact, and it is about a small literary press that's struggling, and they find a diary from the 19th century, and the young woman is writing about the summer guest on the family estate, and I think she's an invalid, and they find out that the summer guest is Anton Chekhov.
Oh, my.
Ooh, okay.
Wow, good idea.
I think it's historical fiction.
What's the book called?
It's called The Summer Guest, okay. And I think it's by Alison Anderson.
There's my recommendation to add to the stack.
And again, if anybody wants to give us a quick call, let me know if there's a book you read every year, 614-292-8513. Here's a dumb question to Michelle Herman. So how do you teach creative writing?
Yeah, that's a dumb question, Christopher.
You got it or you ain't or what?
I'm kidding. No. Look, you teach creative writing the same way you teach music or you teach painting. You know, the fact is all of us have the capacity to sit down and write something, just as all of us kind of naturally will hum a tune or doodle. And what we do is offer some of the basic skills, the kind of craft. How do you write dialogue? How do you think about structure and plot? How do you create a character on the page? Things that people who don't write for a living simply have not thought about. And once you have those basic techniques plus assignments to kind of get you going and lots of reading assignments, you know, people start writing.
Do your students read their own work aloud in your classes?
No, I don't have them do that. But they all read each other's work.
They read each other's work.
They're
yeah.
all handed copies of each other's work to read, and then they talk about it.
And Lee Martin, how do you teach creative writing?
Well, I agree with Michelle that the one thing we do is we teach elements of craft. And then beyond that, I hope I bring my students to a better understanding of the stories that only they can tell. As far as reading their work out loud, occasionally I do have a student read a section of a story or an essay before the workshop conversation begins, just to get the sound of that writer's voice in our heads. We teach them craft, and then I hope we encourage them to find the stuff that only they can deal with.
You taught a course on publishing.
I do. Yeah. Every other year I teach, it's a graduate level course, every other year in the autumn and on off years, the poet Kathy Fagan teaches it. A course that kind of explores publishing and editing as it stands historically and as it stands now. And we now actually have an undergraduate version of it that's taught every spring by one of our own graduate students.
That's like a nuts and bolts practical course, isn't
it? In some ways, it's nuts and bolts practical, but it's also very much theoretical. Like, what does it mean to discover and disseminate literature? We talk a lot about taste and about personal taste versus aesthetic judgment. One of my most fun things to do with my students the very first week is to get everyone to bring in an example of something they love and admire. For me, for example, that would be Chekhov, right? Something they love but don't admire, and something they admire but don't love. And that sparks quite
That's
the conversation, let me tell
does.
You.
Yes. Judith is on the line from Clintonville to talk about Catherine Mansfield.
Oh, good.
Hello, Judith.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I appreciate the reminder to read Catherine Mansfield. I'm going to get her short stories out again. And also to say, as a descendant of New Zealanders, she's not from Australia. She's from Wellington, New Zealand.
She's a Kiwi, yeah. Right.
Okay. We're grouchy cousins. And my husband also likes the reminder of reading the Memoirs of Hadrian. He reads The Plague every year.
Oh, The Plague?
But did you just say The Memoirs of Hadrian by Marguerite Yourcenar?
Yes.
That book, she took 20 years to write that book, and then it went on to be a bestseller.
It's a really good book.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Judith, for your call. So Catherine Mansfield's getting some votes here. I mean,
she's
going to get kicked up on Amazon now. Lee Martin, are you touring, or have you been going around doing readings for Late One Night and out there, appearing in support of your work?
We've been doing local events, and we just got back from the home area of southeastern Illinois, where we did a
How was it taken there?
That was great.
Really?
We did a great event at Espresso and Wine Bar that's opened up in this little town of 4,000 people. It's a beautiful space. We had 63 people out, most of them that I'd gone to high school with, which was a little odd, but it was a really, really great experience.
Did they think they were in the book?
I don't know. Well, some.
Did you meet Rose? Did you meet Rose?
No. But I have met people at those sorts of events who have a connection to the real life stories that inspire the novels.
I was going to say, was your grandmother mad when she...
My grandmother's gone, so we don't have to worry about that.
I do want to thank everybody for joining us today for this discussion. It's always wonderful to have two such compelling writers who live in the area, although they work internationally. Michelle Herman, I wish you a blessed sabbatical.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful time and come back. Your brand new novel is called Devotion, your book of essays from earlier in the year's Last Song, which...
Like a Song,
which
Last
everybody's...
Last Song sounds very sad.
Well, maybe after your sabbatical, you'll write Last Song and get out of my way here. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Lee Martin, very well. I am now reading your book, Break the Skin, which is another page-turner. Your latest novel is called Late One Night. And Cassie Rose, there would be no show without Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic, and her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Thank you very much. And again, if Cassie Rose recommends something on her blog or on this program, read it. I'm telling you right now, you won't be disappointed. I'm Christopher Purdy. I thank everybody. The producer of All Sides is Michael DeBonis. The associate producer is Amy Jurevich. The assistant producer who's been with us today is Shyla Knott. Thank you very much, Shyla. Our interns are Summer Cartwright, Khalid Mualim, and Sydney Schaefer. Video production by Rich Karsminsky and Amber Karsminsky. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson. Look at all these people I'm getting plugs for. Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla and Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Thank you very much and good afternoon.